record show that the House Resources Committee was convened at 1:30 p.m. We Representative Annie Josephson is here. Representative Bob Heron is here. Representative Paul Seaton is here. Vice Chair Representative Mike Harper is here. Representative Craig Johnson is here. My fellow co-chair, Representative David Tallarico, and myself, Representative Benjamin Noel. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones, thank you. Today, my intent is to finish public testimony concerning any amendments and bring the bill back to the committee for discussion and action. I'd like to mention a few guidelines for the people who would like to testify. Please state your name, your affiliation, and limit your testimony to 3 minutes. Is there anyone in the room to testify? Let the record show that Representative Kurt Olson is here. Hold on, here it is. Is there anyone in the room to testify? No one here? Is there anyone at the Legislative Information Offices that would like to testify? We have the Fairbanks LIO office. We have Mary Pierce from Fairbanks representing himself, and he wants to testify. Mr. Pierce.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Nagak and members of the committee. My name is Merrick Pierce. Good afternoon. I'd like to start with a discussion about competition. I'm going to offer up an analogy to try to prove a simple point. It's my Home Depot Lowe's analogy. Now, let's imagine that the CEO of Home Depot cedes to Lowe's the authority to determine when, where, and if Home Depot ever builds a new store. Now, if the Home Depot CEO is that crazy, how many new stores do you think Home Depot is going to get built? How many new stores is Lowe's going to allow Home Depot to build? And of course, the answer is none, because you don't turn over to your competition the authority to determine your best interest and your best course of action. And so, of course, if you correctly answered this question, then you would vote against House Bill 132. I try to imagine what would happen if the President of the United States had offered this kind of legislation before the Congress, where Alaska's governor was limited in what he could do with a pipeline project where 50% of the volume would be precluded from export, or more than 50% of the volume of the project would be excluded from export. You know, we have a lot of competing projects. There's 26 planned LNG liquefaction projects across the world. There's another 16 under construction. There's another 27 that are on stream right now. I'm going to go back a little bit, and I'm going to give you some history and talk about what our competition has been doing to Alaska and how they have been keeping Alaska from moving forward with the project. And in about the time that the legislature passed AGEA, Bill Walker at the time was the general counsel and project manager for the Alaska Gas and Port Authority. Those of us who were paying attention to AGEA, we knew that there was no way we were going to build a large diameter pipeline to Lower 48. And Exxon knew the same thing, that the project was an uneconomic boondoggle. In fact, 5 years before AGEA was passed, the CEO of Exxon, Rex Tillerson, acknowledged that Exxon knew that that pipeline project would never be built. But Bill Walker was able to get some language asserted into the AGEA law that required an evaluation of going to Valdez for an LNG export project. So about 2012, there was a solicitation of interest that Exxon was required to hold, and there were six companies that the Port Authority was able to aggregate into that solicitation. It was CoGas, POSCO, GS Energy, PTT International, PGN LNG, East West Power. The total aggregated volume was about 2.8 billion cubic feet of gas per day, which is more than enough to develop a large diameter gas line. Another entity, Resources Energy Inc. out of Japan, also had an aggregated interest for companies that they'd represented out of Japan, and they were looking for 2.5 billion cubic feet of gas per day. So the total publicly disclosed interest in this solicitation of interest was over 5 billion cubic feet of gas per day. More than double what we need to get going with a large diameter gas line. In fact, it's more than the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission allows for offtake from Prudhoe Bay. So the markets demonstrated they were interested in LNG out of Alaska. They were interested in the deep water ice-free port of Valdez, which has a vessel, Coast Guard vessel management tracking system. And most important, the markets were looking for gas, first gas, by 2019. So what happened? About 6 weeks after the solicitation.
Can you wind down? I'm pretty sure time is up.
30 seconds to wrap up, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry?
30 seconds to wrap up, Mr. Chair.
Well, according to my timer, it was 3 minutes.
I'm sorry. You didn't announce any time limit at the beginning, so I was going to take about 4 minutes.
3 minutes. Well, we said 3 minutes at the onset of the meeting, sir.
Well, the bottom line is that this piece of legislation is designed to tie the governor's hands. It's a very, very, very bad idea.
I'm sorry, sir. Your time is up. Thank you. We have Mr. Harold Hines from Anchorage. He's a representative himself, and he wants to testify. Mr. Hines, you have 3 minutes, please, and the timer is on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Resources Committee. My name is Harold Hines. I'm representing myself. I am a 40-year-plus resident of Anchorage, Alaska. I have 50 years of experience in pipelines and oil production. I've worked on the North Slope gas issues in both the private sector as engineering manager for ARCO at Prudhoe Bay at Steel Startup and as CEO of both ARCO Alaska and ARCO Transportation Company, and in the public sector as the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources and Senior Resource Development Advisor to the Governor during the Hickel administration, and as CEO of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority during three administrations from 2003 to 2012. Thank you for the opportunity to address some important points in the legislature's direction of AGDC in regards to your major decision this fall during a special session on proceeding with a transportation system for North Slope gas. In October of 2013, I offered public comment at the first board meeting of the newly formed AGDC. I encouraged them to, one, assure that the public is well informed of all aspects of utilizing Alaska natural gas, two, conduct business open enough on a continuing basis that the public is brought along, and three, assure that all alternatives are considered and evaluated as to their public good and impacts. And following the progress of work and reviewing available reports, I am concerned that alternative paths and alternative projects utilizing North Slope gas have not been evaluated. I believe that this fall during the special session that an informed public is vital for your major, incredibly important decision on proceeding to the state's multi-billion dollar commitment to the Alaska LNG project. You are picking the horse. You should work hard to assure that Alaskans share your wisdom and commitment. I would suggest to you that HB 132 could be amended to include direction for full evaluation and publication of Alaska's alternative projects and choices. In particular, the decision on royalty in kind versus royalty in value should be fully vetted and disseminated through the Royalty Board public process. Additionally, I would observe that HB 132 will probably be the only Alaska LNG project-related legislation during this regular session, and this is the best opportunity for the legislature to direct preparations for the fall special session on state involvement with the North Slope producers. This fall, you will be sitting as the Alaska Board of Directors, making as big a state fiscal decision as I remember since 1969. Importantly, it also will be the riskiest decision that the state has ever made. Each of the 60 members will be acting individually as a fiduciary. Each of you is entirely responsible for your decision. The body must assure that each member has and understands the information he or she needs to make a responsible decision.
Mr. Hines, can you wind down? Your 3 minutes is up.
I have two sentences left, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
You have a six-month window to develop and vet alternative projects, alternative deals, risks, and rewards. I ask that you consider this bill as a positive vehicle to instruct and focus the additional information requirements for you and the public at large.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hines. We have Charles McKee from Anchorage. He's a representative himself. And hold on, please. We have a question from Ms. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wonder if some of the testifiers could send in their comments in written form as well with some of their suggestions.
Can you do that, please? The previous two that testified, would you send your testimony to the both chairs of the Resources Committee?
This is Harold Hines. My testimony has already been transmitted to you in written form.
Thank you so much. Okay. Mr. McKee, let's see. Can we just do this? Mr. McKee, your time, please.
Yes, my name is Charles McKee, and I testified in behalf of the consideration of this pipeline, this LNG Alaska line, earlier this year or last year, and but I, with a caveat that not to include the outfit out of Canada, the Trans-Canada Partnership. Simply because of the generation facilities that are embedded in their agreement in Lower 48, they bring that along with. So I'm opposing this legislation by House Speaker Mike Chenault that inhibits reorganization including additional design to the pipeline. Simply because the possibility that we can include a new generating infrastructure, when you have a pressurized line, you can have in place the existing technology, bypass generation, and it, which produces electricity off the near flow within the pipeline, and it's called bypass generating facilities, and so the line itself could be generating AC or and or DC current as it's transmitting through the line from A to B, and as it's being rerouted into the existing rail belt infrastructure of the power grid, that would be offsetting the cost of electricity to those communities that are attached to that rail belt line as it exists. So it would be benefiting the community, and if you want public support, you would certainly gain when you reduce the cost of electricity to those communities that are attached to that line. So as it stands, the LNGAK is inclusive with the Trans-Canada Compact. If that would automatically prohibit it, now you're wanting to say, well, we can't increase the size of this other line, and but it also leaves a window of opportunity to include these other technologies that do exist, and they're not publicly controlled. So therefore, they're in-house, they're enclosed, you can't buy into their stock to control their technology. I don't have any interest in it other than they would incur a letter for a premium from us, an opportunity to be included in this line. Thank you very much for your...
Thank you very much, sir. Now we move to Kenai LIO. Mr. Rick Koch, the city manager of the city of Kenai, and he is willing to testify. Mr. Kurtz?
Representative Nagyakanawitpin, and greetings to all the members of the House Resource Committee. Thank you for taking this time on a Saturday to perform the state's work and listen to testimony on HB 132. I wish to express my support for House Bill 132 as a prudent and necessary action to support and move forward the long-awaited project to bring Alaska's bounty of natural gas to Alaskans and to the world's markets. I spent my career managing the interest of state and municipal governments and managing large-scale Alaska construction projects. In doing so, I've gained an understanding of just how difficult it is to develop working public-private partnerships. As a former board member of the Alaska Gas Line Development Authority, I commend the legislature for recognizing and addressing those inherent difficulties in the enabling legislation which created the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. HB 132 provides for safeguards in which we as a state can move forward in a mutually supportive relationship with the major North Slope producers while still protecting the state's interest in an alternative project in the event that the Alaska LNG project does not come to fruition. Years of effort have been expended to create a framework of trust and cooperation not unduly influenced by the political whims of the next election. This framework must be protected by not introducing opposing interest and distrust to the project. In the event that the Alaska LNG project decides not to pursue construction of a large diameter gas line, the state at that time will have every opportunity to modify the scope of the ASAP project with the benefit of feasibility, engineering, and permitting data developed by the Alaska LNG project and the ASAP project. The Alaska LNG project and the ASAP project, as presently developed and further defined by HB 132, are Alaska's best opportunity to realize the long-time goal of developing the natural gas on the Alaska's North Slope. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Koch. Next is Mr. Pat Porter from Kenai, the mayor of the city of Kenai. Mr. Porter.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the
committee. I'm sorry, Ms. Porter, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. You can call me anything. Mr. Chairman and committee, I want to thank you very much for this opportunity, and also thank you for working on your Saturday. The present Alaska LNG project and the current asset project and House Bill 132 establishes the best opportunity to bring North Slope gas reserves to the citizens of Alaska and to world markets, specifically the Pacific Rim. Successful mega projects require decision-making based on extremely complicated and dynamic issues, such as the future demand and market forces, not on political issues. The legislature recognized this in the formation of the Alaska Gas Line Development, and House Bill 132 simply reinforces this process that has successfully moved the two projects forward. And this entire community really looks forward to the project. Any successful project or business endeavor requires that partnerships demand trust and common goals. House Bill 132 simply memorializes those critical understandings. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to you, and have a great day.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Next we have Boyd Knutson from community of Nikiski. Mr. Knutson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Boyd Rocky Knutson. I live in Nikiski, Alaska. And I'm opposed to House Bill 132, and my reason is very simple. I think if we're going to have a backup plan, it should be a viable backup plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Knutson. Now we move to the off-net. We have David Otness from... He's going to be testifying for himself from Cordova. Mr. Otness.
Nagyak It's a pleasure to be able to speak today on something so immense and important to Alaska's future. And I'm winging it here, but I just see so many things about this bill that are shutting off the free flow of information and direction that the state should be going. And I speak from 64 years living in Alaska and a number of generations preceding. And I've been involved in oil company work, exploration. I've been in the merchant marine, working out of Prudhoe Bay, Cook Inlet. And I'm just seeing a lot of holes in this thing. And I tend to question some of its merits based on just the tides in Cook Inlet alone, and especially at Nikiski. We're talking LNG tankers that are larger than our United States aircraft carriers by 100 feet. They're 20 stories high. And to try to move those around in Cook Inlet safely, well, that's the number one issue I have with this whole thing. In terms of the route, we had that established by voter approval back in 2002. And ironically, contrary to Mr. Koch and the mayor's testimony here just recently, we had how many years, 2003 to 2012, invested in ANGDA, and suddenly that isn't worth considering relative to changing horses again. I'm just kind of flabbergasted by the way this thing is being railroaded. Too many specifics, I'll have to really address this in some written testimony, but thank you very much for your time. I'm most definitely opposed to House Bill 132. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews. Mr. George Pierce, representing himself from the city of Kosilov. Mr. Pierce?
Yes, my name is George Pierce. I live in Kosilov, Alaska. I'd like to thank you for taking my testimony. I'm against HB 132. It does not move anything forward. All it does is tie our hands, and it's bad for Alaskans. We need competition to make sure we get a pipeline. And I wonder why you don't demand answers from the oil companies like you do Mr. Foskey. And the oil companies are not our partners. Most of the committee there have been there for over 10 years. We have had 5 pipeline proposals in the last 10 years with no results. We have a governor now that's going to guarantee, that wants to get a guarantee on a pipeline and represent the Alaskans. I have been listening to Gavel to Gavel, and I hope Friday's meeting cleared up for some of you who to talk to. It's the director of the AGNDC. Dan Fauske. And how friendly some of you were made me think you know him, that you know him well from the past. And I believe this has been his title for a while and found no excuse who not to talk to. Mr. Dan Fauske, executive director of AGDC, pointed out that the board of AGDC has directed him to come back on April 9th with an estimate as to what work and cost would be involved. The AGDC board has asked to look at an ANSI 600 with added compression and to look at an ANSI 900, which would be stronger steel for more compression. That's what the AGDC board wants to check out. There's no LNG configuration made in this estimate. What did change was members of the board. 3, Alaskans. Who's going to represent Alaskans? The new members and a majority of the directors of the board wants to analyze real data that comes back to the AGDC and board with what kind of cost involved. The board sees into the future if the corporations decide not to go forward with an LNG project, we would be without a backup. So, I agree with the AGDC board. Do we want to end up with nothing, or at least have a for sure plan. The AGDC wants to examine if we can get to a bigger size line and bring gas to a greater volume to the same destination. I believe HB4 gives the AGDC board the right to look at these alternatives, maybe another option.
Your 3 minutes are up. Please wrap up.
I thank you for allowing me to testify, and I'm definitely against this bad piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. We now go to Mr. George Sider. He's the representative himself from Soldotna. Mr. Sider.
Hi, my name is George Sider. I live in Soldotna. I'm a 20-year resident of Alaska, Korean War vet, retired police officer. I've been a Republican since I was 8 years old, campaigning for Wendell Willkie against FDR. I have a ability as a police officer to look at things a little different than most people, and I don't like taking any prisoners. The Republicans in the Alaska legislature are acting like the mafia of the far left. Bill Walker was elected by us as an average, by the average citizens, to get the best deal on LNG, with Alaska being the prime beneficiary. He also promised to get it done after you guys have done nothing for 30 plus years. I and my friends consider what you're doing as either a payoff from the producers, or you're just out to ambush Bill Walker. Now it's so absurd that you would have a pipeline that can't produce money for foreign people to help pay for the gas and pay for everything else, and you're going to put the whole burden on the people from Alaska is absurd. If you spend more time working for Alaska and Alaskan, you would have had the pipeline operating years ago. Instead, the Republican leadership has given us a mountain of debt, $10 million a day, and you should be ashamed of yourselves. The bill itself is unintelligible to the human mind, obviously written and sponsored by traitors to Alaska. We elected Bill Walker to be the governor. Get over it. I'm opposed to 321,
132.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sider. We're going to go to off-net. Again, Mr. Ron Hyde from Kenai, representing PIL Logistics. Mr. Hyde.
Thank you very much. It is with great respect that I thank you for taking my testimony today. I, too, am an Alaskan, having grown up in Bush, Alaska, spending nearly 30 years of my life out there trying to make a living. I'm a business owner on the Kenai Peninsula, and I'm fully committed to a gas line for Alaska. In particular, I am very supportive of the AKLNG project, and as such, I'm not interested in going backwards another 30 years and contemplating a bunch of new ideas. Currently, the AKLNG project is predicted to come directly to Kenai, actually to Kiski, as was promised in Governor Walker's Kenai inauguration speech at Kenai, in which I was present. And that seems to have changed in the coming the weeks shortly after that celebration. There's a lot of potential future economic activity that will transform our region, and we have a lot to gain. I have a lot invested already in the oil and gas industry in Alaska. I've worked directly and indirectly with companies that produce oil and gas, and I've been responsible for hiring several hundred people over hundreds and over hundreds of vendors and subcontractors, which created another several hundred jobs for Alaskans, both in the urban parts of Alaska and rural Alaska. The Point Thompson project's an example of a project that created hundreds of millions of dollars for Alaska in revenue to Alaskans already. In particular, it will be one of the cornerstones of the future of this gas line. And this project, Point Thompson project, gave me the opportunity to hire the workforce and the families that I've hired over these years. In our busy partisan lives, it seems to, if you look at partisan issues, it seems to take disasters to bring the Alaskans together. And disasters create, as everybody knows, create economic uncertainty, test human spirits, change qualities of life, and can cause communities to become stagnant and destitute for years. The governor's flip-flopping, broken commitments, and suggesting to cheat on Alaskan citizens and our business partners, and again, I say our business partners, of which we as citizens are 25% of that project, for us to cheat on our partners and suggest a competing gas line and derail the work that has been done, the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent, and the momentum that's in place right now to give us a gas line today, not after another 30 years of contemplation, is personally embarrassing to me. Project certainty is one of the things that these companies look at when they're trying to decide on what to do with a project and how to invest in it, how to take it to the shareholders. In this case, the state of Alaska has not demonstrated to me that ASAP and making it bigger and taking another 10 or 15 or 30 years to make it whatever Governor Walker wants to make it is not project certainty to me. Right now we have a project that if we act as a partner and act ethical as a partner, Alaskans that is, you and I, our families, we stand to gain a gas line in the foreseeable coming years of 10 years.
You please wrap up, your 3 minutes is up.
Sure. I guess the biggest point I want to make is that we are creating uncertainty as Alaskans through the voice of Governor Walker, and we need to take a minute to look at that if we're going to attract business of any kind in the future or investment of any kind in the future in Alaska. Thank you very much for taking my testimony.
Thank you very much. And is there anyone in the room to testify? Is there anyone else online?
I have one person coming through.
Okay, we have one person coming through right now.
Bill Warren. You already testified.
Still here. We're still waiting for the person online. Okay, we have in the off-net, Felicia Keith Jones from the community of Sterling, representing Highmark Distillery. Ms. Keith Jones, go ahead.
Hello, this is Felicia Keith Jones. I'm calling in from Sterling in Solotna, Alaska, and I just wanted to call in support of the Alaska LNG gas pipeline, and I am very interested in getting clarity as to whether the project will continue forward or if it has come to a standstill. This pipeline is very important to our small community. Many friends and neighbors and neighboring businesses are waiting in limbo to see if they should expand to accommodate a larger population or if they should go ahead and button down the hatches because there won't be any further income from an oil gas pipeline coming to our community. And as you all know, it's March. It's time for us to get ready for the tourist season in our community, fishing season in our community, and then, of course, continuing oil and gas activity. And without any certainty as to which direction we should take, we are in quite a limbo down here. My industry, a distillery, making hard spirits, we depend completely on the population to see if it's a viable industry. It also drives large tourist revenue, and we're able to produce that revenue only if we know where our community stands. I also personally have rental properties and investment real estate here and don't know if we should continue to improve and grow that or if we should make sure that we're safe and secure. So definitely wanting to know which way we should grow and wanting some clarity from the governor, and just wanted to call in large support for the continuing of the Alaska LNG gas pipeline here in our community.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone?
Very well.
Is there anyone else at the LIOs? Okay. Thank you for your testimony today.
I'm taking at ease.
Call the meeting back to order. Thank you for the testimony today. If members of the public would like to submit their written testimony to the committee, please email to lhres@akleg.gov or fax to 907-465-2827. I repeat, 907-465-2827. I'd like to close public testimony. Are there any amendments for House Bill 132? Hearing none, if there are no amendments, the court, I'd like to entertain a motion to move House Bill 132 from committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to move the committee substitute for House Bill 132, version 29-LS0623/P, with individual recommendations and attached physical notes.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. I may withdraw my objection after I hear from the committee.
Go ahead,
thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me sort of tell you my position on this. I said in a previous committee that I liked Senate Bill 138. I continue to like Senate Bill 138. I'm proud to have voted for Senate Bill 138. And when I met constituencies even before I was elected, you know, everybody seemed to be in favor of large gas line. I never heard anybody opposed to it. When I asked about why the limits of no more export available than we consume, about 240 million cubic feet, I found the answer a little dubious. It seemed a little bit arbitrary for a sort of a demarcation about what ASAP should be allowed to produce. I reviewed the committee minutes of about 23, there were actually 23 committee hearings on House Bill 4, and I couldn't see anything that precluded what AGDC is doing in making a pivot, and I confess I don't really know the extent of the pivot, but we heard something about that. I think that House Bill 4 anticipated this adjustment. It even anticipated it. It even actually invited it. And I could read those quotes from the record, but I'll just reference those 23 hearings, because often there was a comment about that. That is, a comment that if the GEA cap was lifted, all systems would go, and this could go just about in any direction. When I asked Mr. Richards and Mr. Fauske if any statute or previous agreement like the HOA or MOU precluded what they were doing, the answer was no. And no one at the hearing, particularly yesterday, provided a response that indicated Mr. Richards or Mr. Fauske were incorrect and that somehow what they were doing was precluded from some existing law or agreement. I would note that I remain personally protective and invested in Senate Bill 138. I agree, because it's, I think, provable, that it's the furthest along the stage-gated path that Alaska has come on a gas line. And I will also tell you that the comment about a slowing of the EIS process made me a little anxious, because I don't think we can afford a whole lot of pauses. On the other hand, I've read and heard countless times that no more than half of these plans will ever be developed. We heard testimony about that just this morning. Indeed, when Mr. Persily, I guess these won't be coming as much because he's retired from that job, but when he would send us the progress of the worldwide LNG market, I took it from him that he was educating us and edifying us, but he was also trying to tell us that, you know, this is a competitive world. There's a lot going on. It was sort of, I took it as sort of a, not a warning, but an advisement. I think having some options is wise. I think it gives us more leverage with our North Slope leasehold allies. Many negotiations remain to be done, and I think anything that would strengthen our bargaining position should be encouraged. The industry has not given any specific indication that anything the governor has proposed or is proposing has given it particular reservations. The governor did run on a platform different than the previous governors in many respects, including how we develop and produce gas fields. So none of his position is surprising. If his administration had proposed a pure defense of Senate Bill 138, all in with no strings or adjustments, that would have been newsworthy. During the House Bill 4 testimony, the legislature heard repeatedly that a single year's delay would cost the small gas line $200 million in inflation. Now, arguably, you could use those facts in just about any direction, or that statement. But I think the same, if it applies here, would suggest that we need to have a legitimate alternative. Now, fortunately, I think within about 18 months, this matter hopefully will become moot. We will know if Exxon, Conoco, and BP are prepared to enter into FEED, and people at that point will be investing, as I understand it, in the low billions of dollars. That would be a strong sign that the AKLNG is moving forward and may truly happen. But until that time, I think we need some options.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Parker.
With the permission of the chair, I'd like to offer a response to the concerns raised by Representative Josephson.
Representative Parker.
And thank you. And I, Representative Josephson, I personally think that every single thing you have just said is solidly grounded in fact, without question. I think what might be at issue is how we interpret the facts and, you know, amalgamate it into the larger construct of where are we at and where are we going. There's been a long history behind getting where we're at today with developing Alaska's North Slope Natural Gas. And in our legislative world, you've gone back and, you know, so accurately, you know, looked back to the history of this effort that began about 5 years ago, 6 years ago with House Bill 369, when we originally directed Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to create the AGDC subsidiary and embark upon developing a project plan for getting Alaska's gas into the hands of Alaskans. At the time that I think most everyone recognized that the AGEA effort was not going to succeed. The world was changing. We needed to get something going here. You know, and 369 gave way to House Bill 9, which was the first effort to really create a standalone gas company. We got to HB 4, where we actually succeeded in doing it. And very much, we were constrained by the AGEA 500 MCF a day limit. But it was very clearly crafted into that bill that, you're right, should the AGEA limitation go away, that project could largely morph into something larger, or we even gave AGDC the authority to be Alaska's gas line company, Alaska's gas pipe company, to pursue whatever project gained the most viability and was able to move forward, while we always had in our back pocket that, for lack of better words, the pipe that has come to be called the ASAP pipe, where we as a state were ready to say, if industry can't figure this out, remember the vagaries at the time, industry didn't know where it was going. You know, we didn't have any big project. You know, the Lower 48 project had gotten stymied. Things were trying to figure out where it was going. We had that backup project, and we, the legislature, said we are going to, if we have to, we are going to do it alone. We've proved we can do it economically. Then came Senate Bill 138 last year. With Senate 138 last year, I agree, we all made a big decision. We chose the horse we were going to ride. I think we heard some testimony, the public testimony, that indicated that there was a choice, we were making a choice between projects. That's not before us today. We made that choice last year. We chose Senate 138 to endorse publicly, openly, and throw the entire weight of the state behind the concepts, the mechanisms, the funding, the financing, the rubrics that were all encompassed in the hours and hours of testimony we had last year in evaluating Senate 138. And we have made that decision, and we are, in fact, moving forward with the big project. And that's really the bill that's in front of us is about keeping going forward and not going backward. It's about maintaining and assuring we maintain that momentum in the most cost-effective manner possible. point, I think, where, and I agree with you also, we do still have our backup project, and that's this difference between a competing project and a backup project. We are ready. If that big project falters, we, the state, have created an entity in AGDC. We have money sitting there. We can, if the large project, for whatever means, falters, all of those resources will immediately be redirected in grabbing that backup project, and it will go forward full speed. That's kind of the idea behind this. This bill is a bill that just makes sure that we properly, I think that we, the state, don't try to ride two horses at once, that we don't go forward simultaneously creating a competing project out of the backup project. This is really the backup, kind of, to me, it's kind of like the Backup Project Protection Act, making sure the money's there when we need it, making sure that we have the backup project ready to go, but making sure that we don't either overtly or inadvertently, through creating competition with ourselves. I love the one guy that on the just testified saying, basically, you know, we start cheating our own partners, that we keep the horse that is moving forward going strong, we keep feeding it, we keep moving it. If it falters, we preserve and protect the backup project. And that's what certainly the intent behind this bill is. Keep momentum going with the big project, preserve and protect the backup project, making sure we have the money sitting there should we ever need it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my concerns are, you know, some of them have been raised already. And just thinking, you know, that we're not constrained by the AGIA limits now, so that does give an opportunity to reconsider and have that flexibility. I guess one thing I find striking is that we haven't heard from any of our industry partners in opposition or in support of this legislation. And just wondering if even they see that there may be a new opportunity while we're not constrained by AGIA. And the proposal that we were presented with yesterday by Mr. Fowsky gives them 3.5 weeks. They said they'd come back on April 9th, so that's just 3.5 weeks. I think the most concerning thing I heard yesterday was just the pause in the EIS work, because we don't want any delay. But if we're only talking about 3.5 weeks, if that's when they're going to come back at that April 9th meeting and have information, then that seems like a short enough amount of time that that we could wait and see what information they bring back and be able to sort of cross that off the list, or see if that option presents something that's even a better deal for the state of Alaska, or even has more interest because of new opportunities. So that's my word of caution right now, just thinking that we're not asking to wait too long before they could be back before us. We'd still be in session, and we'd have the opportunity to make a decision at that time, maybe armed with some new information that would, again, you know, maybe there's just an opportunity that we don't know enough about that would be even better.
Thank you. Representative C.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we all recognize that as we were constructing the initial projects to go forward with ASAP and AGDC, the constraint was always the 500 million cubic feet a day pipeline. So we got a development that was going forward that was designed on that, actually stretched to where, yes, if you had very little compression, you could fit within that guideline. I guess, you know, the idea of the backup project is ready to go. I'm not sure if that's the case, if we're going to say that the only backup project is the 500 million cubic feet a day project. So I don't know where we're at on that section of things. The thing that bothers me somewhat is that we've created AGDC with a independent board and an independent function to go forward and to do actions for the state, and now we're saying, well, we don't like the new configuration of the board or their decision, and so we're going to go in and pass a law to override what a decision of the board is. So that is really because Mr. Fowsky came to us and said that he'd been requested by the board to explore these two other options, and we were saying, no, you won't with this bill for a certain period of time. Now, that certain period of time gives me some comfort, because we're not saying that, that before we would go forward with a, the plan. Obviously, if it's more economic, if we would have to do that, they would come up and refresh it. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm on this dilemma of I don't want to see a competing project get in the way or interfere with the progress we're making on AKLNG. I also am on this horns of the dilemma of how far into the independent agency do we go to telling them we're making the decisions now instead of the board. So this is a, you know, one of these things, a balancing issue, and I'm not going to ask to delay this bill from moving forward. I think it's got a ways through the process to go. But I don't think anything is clear-cut one way or another, but I don't want anything to come in and our partners to in AKLNG to think that we are jumping ship, because I don't think exploring the option of what would the backup be at a larger diameter than it, or larger throughput capacity than what it is saying that we're jumping ship, but we're having a backup tuned better, maybe, in case we don't reach final investment decision to go forward with AKLNG. For, you know, there's all kinds of competitive and non-competitive, not us competitive, but between companies and between projects around the world. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that we've gotten a pretty good explanation that the public is not sure which of these. I think that we're pretty sure, we've made decisions that we want to go forward, but, you know, we need to recognize that there are questions. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to hold this bill up. I'm not entirely convinced it's needed. I'm not, but I don't think it's going to be a big impediment. And so I guess that's saying I'm unsure of where we are, Mr. Chairman, but I thought I wanted to put it on the record and let the committee know that, I'm considering both sides of the issue.
Thank you. Mr. Representative Heron.
I've been relatively quiet. Just one question to Mr. Fauske yesterday. But I think that with 138 being a legislation that was passed and signed by the executive branch, so that was our policy. That's our policy. And so we get a new governor, and the administration could have introduced a bill stating that he wanted to go down a different path. And I found that troubling, and that's why I'm one of the sponsors of this proposed legislation, is it is a reaction from the other branch of government through legislation to create a policy related to this matter. Again, what has bothered me is that the executive branch, by verbal edict, wants to go in a different direction. So I think that the legislature is having this dialogue and debate in a public way about the legislature should decide what's important. And so I think that the legislation should move from committee, should go to another committee, and see where it goes, regardless of all these other timelines. And if the board wants to make its decision as an independent body, so be it. But again, I don't think that we should sit on this legislative process and let the other branch do it by verbal edict. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And issue a check to me, I mean, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm troubled by a couple of things. First, I think the EIS being put on hold is a big red flag. The federal government clearly sees a competing project. I'm concerned about language the governor used, such as race to the finish line. I mean, that shows competition. I believe April 9th is 2 days after the first Cross Gulf Ferry leaves for us to start leaving town. It's 10 days before the end of session. I think for us to wait for April 9th would be just, well, I said enough about that. I like the analogy that was used by one of the testifiers. It's about Home Depot and Lowe's, except I think the new hardware store moving in next to Lowe's is a Lowe's. So I think we're competing with ourselves, and Lowe's wouldn't do that. Home Depot wouldn't do that. I don't think the state of Alaska could do that. So I would like to get this bill in a position. I haven't seen anything yet from the administration or AGDC that tells me that or from the producers that says this is a good idea. So I'd like to move this bill on, get it positioned, and be ready to move on it if it's necessary. I think stalling it would be a tragedy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Olson.
I think my biggest concern is the governor's aversion to put out his own bills justifying his positions, relying on us to do it, tearing ours apart half the time. Medicaid would be a perfect example, although it's not before this committee. If we do, he can talk about his position, but until we see it in writing, it's we're second guessing what his intentions are. So, as the session progresses, maybe we'll see more bills that outline the direction that he wants to go in, and gives us something, because we're precluding the public from any testimony on anything that on his views. They get to testify on ours, but. I think it'd be a much cleaner process.
With that, House Bill 132 removed from committee. I'm sorry, Representative Josephson, is your objection maintained?
It is. Can I make two other quick remarks, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman? The first one I would like to make is about Steve Butt, the director or the person in charge, seconded from Exxon. You know, he has been very impressive, and I thought about him because nothing that I've heard about Senate Bill 138 has moved one inch. In other words, there's been no, well, we said that then, but now we mean something different. And I think the plan has some credibility because of that. My other quick comment is, while it's true the governor wants to look at options, he's also said that SB 138 needs to process and progress in the way it has. But with that, I will maintain my objection.
You have stated that your objection is maintained?
Yes.
Madam Secretary, please call the roll for House Bill 132.
Okay. On reporting House Bill 132, Representative Herron.
Yes.
Representative Hawker.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative Tarr.
No. Excuse me, no.
Co-Chair Talarico.
Yes.
Co-Chair Nagiak.
Yes.
Seven yay. Two nay.
By a vote of seven yeas to two nays, House Bill 132 has been adopted. With that, House Bill 132 moves from committee. We'll take a brief adage for the signing of the committee report. With that, House Bill 132 is moved down to committee. With individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Thank you very much. Been a long afternoon. Before we adjourn, is there any other business before the committee? Representative Olson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yesterday we had a very interesting meeting, and at the beginning of that meeting we had a lot of dialogue. I believe everybody on the committee that was present had an interchange with either the AGDC people or with the Department of DNR. A number of questions were asked, a number of requests for information were made. What I'd like to request is we have a verbatim transcript of the meeting made, so everybody will be on the same page, and then when that comes out, obviously it'd go to the co-chairs, but I think a copy would go to Dan Fauske immediately and Marty Rutherford as well, and probably one of the governor's liaisons, probably somebody from the governor's office. But apparently Dan Fauske is the chair, but Marty was also a part of it. But at the end of the meeting as well, when they had finished up their PowerPoint, there were a number of requests made for information as well. And I think if we have that and they have copies of it, there won't be any confusion about what we ask for, or we won't have any confusion about what we ask for or what we get back. But I know it's going to be difficult for the clerks, and I apologize in advance, but that's my request.
No objection. Well, I would ask the secretary to...
Thank you. Hopefully get OT.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the people who testified on House Bill 132 today. This has been a long process, and we're doing the right thing and by listening to people. And I think that, we heard a lot of back and forth from committee members, and that's how things should be worked out. And I really enjoyed this process because it's working. And we can all go out with a feeling that, yes, we have a system that works, and we should continue to keep on that path. I'd like to thank the people who testified on House Bill 132 today. On Monday, March 16, the House Resources Committee will hold confirmation hearings for the Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Designate Mark Myers and the Department of Fish and Game Commissioner Designate Sam Cotton. We are adjourned at 2:38.